Hello and welcome to the Happy Money Podcast. On this episode, we are going to be discussing the big, beautiful bill. And we're going to be discussing the good, the bad, and yes, the ugly parts of the bill. Because to me, there are some ugly parts, there's some great parts, and there's some so-so parts. Mickey, how are we doing today?
Doing well, Pops. How are we doing today?
I'm good. And I want to start this off by saying and making people understand that the 70,000 plus pages of the tax code are written to stimulate behavior. And if you don't understand that and you're saying, well, why do rich people pay more taxes than poorer people? It's because people who own companies, people who own real estate, they are the engine drivers of the economy. They're the ones who are creating the jobs. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are out there risking their capital. So it's shouldn't be a secret that someone who is an owner of a company has hundreds of employees. He's really valuable to the government because he's creating value for the economy. He has hundreds of people working. Those people are paying taxes. He's making profits with his company as well. He's providing a valuable service that the government can't provide. Mm-hmm. That's why it's stimulating the economy. Now, if you're a W-2 employee or even a small business owner, let's start with W-2s first, Mike. W-2s, they pay the highest taxes. They get the less tax breaks because there's not really that much risk of having a job.
Yeah.
You are creating value, but you're not creating value on a macro level. You're creating on the micros level, your own. Right now, when you start a small business, okay, small businesses get much better tax breaks. But as you go up the ladder and you create more value you create, the more they're going to incentivize you to continue to create value and to continue to have you save on your taxes.
Even within a company-wide perspective, you think of this and you think, why does the CEO make more than me? It's because, like you said, he's stimulating jobs. But not only that, he's the one making the decisions, so much so to where if he makes a wrong decision, especially two or three times in a row. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a Starbucks employee and you mess up three orders in a row, you're going to get a slap on the wrist. You know, you're going to be like, do better next time. If you mess up three deals as a CEO of Microsoft, like, they're going under.
Yes.
Whole company's going under.
Yes.
And so there's a level of risk. It's the risk and return association, mm-hmm. right? The higher your risk gets, the more mm-hmm. your return has to be.
What do you think? I want to answer this first, but I want to pose the question to you as far as the ugly parts of the bill. For me, the ugly part of any bill that passes through Congress is the amount of spending. Like, it's hard to pass a bill through Congress with all these entitlements. You see the Democrats are screaming, they're going to take away Medicare, they're going to take away Social Security. Mm-hmm. Well, sooner or later, it's going to get taken away from us because we can't afford it.
Can't afford it.
The entitlements are crazy. I mean, there's $37 trillion plus in debt. The interest on the debt is higher than our defense spending. Mm-hmm. We have to rein in entitlements. And the ugly part of the bill, I wish they'd done a better job of looking at the spending portions of the bill. And I think we have to start looking at this as a country. I think, you know, when you're looking at politicians, term limits, I think we have to have term limits for these Absolutely. Individuals. I wanted to say guys, but there's a lot of women in Congress as well. I think we need term limits. And I like the fact that DeSantis is coming out saying we need a balanced budget amendment. Mm-hmm. When we're not in wartime, I get it. We need to spend more. Yeah. But we need certain ways to be able to balance this budget and get this deficit under control. Because when your GDP is 130% of debt, that's not a good thing. It's not going to end well. It may take a little longer, but sooner or later, it ain't going to end well, Mike.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, the spending is probably on a larger scale the biggest problem.
Yes.
Because again, you do have Medicaid costs, and you do have things like student loan debts being shrinking and more restrictions on that. Mm-hmm. And those are definitely a big hit to the American people. However, in the long term, we can't keep spending like this because mm-hmm. if we do, like we said, these programs are only going to shrink and shrink.
Yes. Right. Michael, there's one other thing in the bill that just stood out to me. It's the SALT deductions again, whereas now in states, you can start deducting yes. property taxes.
Yeah.
Now, for me, we live in Florida. Our taxes in Florida on this home are $15,000. This home in New York, taxes for property would be at least $50,000. Oh, wait, 50 G's for this house.
Depends on where in New York, right?
Well, I'm talking about where we lived in Putnam County.
Oh, absolutely.
Putnam County. Maybe more.
Yeah.
Right. So I, in Florida, am subsidizing right now what's going on in New York City, right? Because all of a sudden, as a New Yorker, you can deduct, I think it's up to $40,000 of your property taxes.
It went from 10 to 40.
The cap. So yeah. But down here, property taxes are so much cheaper down here.
Yes.
So and I don't like that part of the bill because you're subsidizing and you're telling the taxes, the states that have higher taxes for property, don't worry about it. You're gonna get a write-off. Mm-hmm. I don't like that part of the bill. That's another part that just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is you're paying so much in taxes in New York anyways, so they're like, you know what, we might as well give you guys a break.
Yeah, but it doesn't give them an incentive to rein the spending in at all.
Yeah.
On the state level or on the city level or on the school board level. I mean, back in 2004, we were paying $30,000 for property taxes.
Yeah.
We had well water, we had septic, mm-hmm. and the schools were okay, but 30 G's?
Yeah. It was upstate New York. It wasn't even the city.
Yeah, it was a nice house, but it wasn't like palatial.
No.
I mean, that's insane if you think about it back then. So for me, it comes back to the spending. I keep hearing getting rid of property taxes. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. You know? But again, so property tax is interesting because Trump and the Republican administration have no control over that.
No, they don't.
That comes down to your local mm-hmm. your local county, your mm-hmm. states.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to see that eliminated at some point. But
you were talking about something about suppressors in the bill.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
We'll talk about that.
So I work with an FFL.
What's an FFL?
FFL is a federal firearms license. Uh-huh. It's a license to be able to sell firearms, ammunition, et cetera. Uh-huh. And one of the big things that happened was they had introduced a law that was supposed to get passed, which is we have this thing called the National Firearms Act, the NFA of 1934.
Mm-hmm.
And that put a tax stamp on each item you purchase, suppressor, short-barreled rifle, and a short-barreled shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
Those are classified as any gun with a barrel of 16 inches or less, any rifle or shotgun, or the overall length has to be less than 26 to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
And each rifle, shotgun, or suppressor in this category you pay for has to have a $200 tax stamp. You need an individual set of fingerprints and passport photos for each gun to be sent to the ATF
wow.
and your local sheriff's office. And ATF just introduced an electronic website for this because they're like everyone else, they're so behind in technology and government.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would wait about 9 or 12 months on average for your suppressor.
Nine or 12 months. I went through the process with you. It's actually not that bad.
No, it wasn't because we did it digitally. I said, yes. We're not sending in anything from the mail because we're going to hear back from them in a year. So I said, screw that. We're going to do it online.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I'm doing.
And what happened in the bill right now?
What they introduced is they said, okay, for each item, we're going to cancel out your $200 tax. And now it's, they kept registration. Initially it was, let's get all the registration off. Somehow that got changed by somebody. And now they're getting sued, the government, because the whole point of this was, hey, this is a tax, we can regulate it. And now there's no more tax. And now it's kind of like, how can you regulate it if there's no tax? And so I hope that goes through. But again, it's like for the average everyday American that's, you know, making less than $50,000 a year, it's kind of a hit on them. It's like, guys, why are we taxing something that shouldn't be taxed in the first place? And we know this is the money grab.
Yes.
And so why are we kind of going with this?
Well, it was disincentivized people to purchase. That's what a tax ultimately does.
Yes, exactly.
It disincentivizes people to actually purchase a suppressor. And, you know, people think of suppressors as pew pew, like really, really quiet. Yeah. No, it's not like that. It's actually better because if you're in a neighborhood, we've got nice 5 acres, we've got a shooting berm. It's actually pretty good for the neighbors. They don't hear it. It really muzzles the sound, not to the level of a little peep that you hear on TV, but at the same time, it does a really good job.
No, I mean, if you've got a rifle with a suppressor, I mean, if you're using supersonic ammunition, just standard ammunition, you still need hearing protection.
Yes.
It's still significantly louder than most people think for the most part.
Yes. $200. What are some of the things that you liked about in the bill?
So again, that was a big thing. And again, I hope they sue the government for all this.
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting that we actually got some kind of passing on no tax on tips and overtime. This is one of the most misunderstood things, by the way. And what this is, it's not a tax cut on all tips and overtime. As far as payroll tax, you still got to pay payroll tax, Social Security, and so on. It's a deduction against your federal income taxes.
Oh.
And so people who make less than $75,000, you report your tips. Let's say you make 60 grand, 20 of that came to tips.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you reduce your taxable income from 60 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
That's mainly what it was.
Big, isn't it?
It's a huge difference.
So Michael, would it be safe to say that I'm in a different tax bracket than you?
Yeah, I have no idea. That's a great question.
Significantly higher.
Why do I bring it up?
I just want to rub it in a little bit. I want to have a little fun with that. But why would I bring that up? It's because I think people need to understand the rich and the wealthy didn't get tax cuts in this bill. It's just an extension of what we had.
Yes.
And what happens, you had said it to me, which I love what you said, it's just stabilizing business. Business knows what they're going to have to pay in the next 3 or 4 years. And I've got stats here. And that took, this to me was mind-blowing. The bottom 50%, people making less than $50,000 a year, they pay 2% of federal income taxes. The middle, from $50,000 to $1 million, they pay 25%. Mm-hmm. The upper 9%, people who make between 1 and 10 million, pay 30% of the federal income taxes. Top 1%, more than 10 million, they pay 42% of the income taxes. So you've got like the top 10% are paying 72% of the taxes. They're already taxed.
They're already taxed crazy
amounts. A lot.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a fine line where you need to be careful, where states like New York, where they have high property taxes, high state income taxes, and you're seeing what's going on, all these hedge funds, all the money, where is it going? It's going to it's going to states that are being run very efficiently. Because if you look at Florida right now, Florida's GDP to their debt is like 0.9%. It's run very efficiently here. We don't have a state income tax. So if you're making $1 million a year in New York and you go to Florida, you just got 60 G's in your pocket.
Yeah.
There's no city taxes on top of that. So you're saving significantly. So these states have to be careful of taxing people too high because they can leave now.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of these companies can relocate and they leave, and you see that's what's happening. So I think it's a fallacy. And that's what I like about this bill, extending tax cuts, the tax framework, the tax brackets that we had originally, and let's keep those in place. I want to incentivize people who work and make a ton of money. I want them to make more money because the more productive they are and the more money they make, the more income they'll have to pay because they're making more.
And that's kind of the thing. There's this mentality of, you know, the rich person in the knight in shining armor is coming to take away all of their problems, right?
Yes.
And again, that doesn't really work because, like you said, what's stopping them from leaving? Mm-hmm. I even thought about this, like, what would happen if somebody making $1 million, if they had no tax cuts, no tax breaks, anything like that, mm-hmm. you go from $1 million to $500,000 and just you're shooting that away in taxes. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, they're going to move somewhere else. They're going to move to a different state, different country, and find different ways to avoid that. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, okay, so how can we utilize this? How can we kind of come to a compromise of, okay, these guys are going to pay the most tax, but we still got to kind of cut them a break at the mm-hmm. same time.
You know, Michael, I got really fortunate back in 2011 when I started partnering with Jake in real estate. I didn't understand the ramifications of taxes. And this bill, you know what this bill does? Bonus depreciation, baby. Oh, back to 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, I didn't write the rules of the game. I learned years and years ago to understand what the rules were, the rules of money.
Mm-hmm.
My father always told me, it's not what you make.
It's what you keep.
And once I understood that, it was life-changing to me. And I think people need to understand that there's rules out there. You have ChatGPT. Go right now and start prompting Chat. How can I start saving money on taxes?
Yes.
I mean, I use it a lot better than I do, but if I had to do that, I'm sure Chad would tell you what you're doing. Start a small business,
yeah.
Your FFL business. All of a sudden you can start deducting your computer. You can start deducting stuff. We have a podcast right now. A lot of the stuff that goes towards that small business, you can buy it pre-tax and then you write it off from the business. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You're using a cell phone, using a small office here, using computer supplies, you're buying education materials.
Yes.
That stuff is all taxed, pre-tax. You're not getting taxed on that. Whereas if you're a W-2 employee and you have a cell phone, well, you have to buy that from the money that you have left over.
Yeah.
It's incredible
yeah.
to understand the tax code, Mike.
Yeah. And even with that, I think it's interesting because even if you take it away from a, you know, let's save on taxes, because that's ultimately the number one question is, how do I make more money with that?
Ah.
Okay. When we start making more money, naturally more taxes follow. And then we can ask the question of how can I save on taxes, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And so even with that, I don't really see the idea of people, you know, how do I save money? How do I make money? Because there's so many tools now that you can just, like I said, you write in ChatGPT, how do I make a budget? Here's what I save. How do I get out of debt, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so many different ways you can do this. 30 years ago, you can use the argument, I don't know how to do this. But for the most part, that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yes.
Anyone can start a business. Anyone can make side money. Anyone can do all this stuff now mm-hmm. because all the information is readily available.
Mm-hmm. From the Happy Money, Happy Family, Happy Legacy perspective, we wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring in the legacy piece and I want you to dwell on the Happy Money piece as well. But from a Happy Legacy piece, you're paying estate taxes. It's 50%.
I hate estate taxes.
Now think about it. You've gone through your whole life. You've worked on your whole life. You've saved up X amount of money when it passes to your heirs. Mm-hmm. they pay an inheritance tax. Now, I think it's raised to $12 million per member. So $12 million for dad, $12 million for mom. I think it's $25 million.
25.
Yeah, for two. Couple. And they made that into law.
Yeah.
That's huge for a lot of people. Because I don't think, for me personally, to have a family work through it, creating a legacy, working their butts off their entire life. Yeah. They've made a ton of money. They've already paid property taxes, sales tax, state income tax, all of that, federal income tax on that money. It's already been paid. They're going to be giving it to their heirs and they've got to pay taxes.
I don't really care where people stand with the whole, you know, rich parents and this kind of stuff. Like, again, you spend your whole life paying taxes only to die and pay more taxes.
Yes.
It's like, that's what we're leaving behind.
Yes.
I think that concept is insane. Mm-hmm. I think it's a horrible concept to leave.
And then from the happy money perspective, do you have any thoughts on, you know, you're generating happy money. You're at least trying to, you know, you're there, you're working, you want to have a great job. And let's say you have a terrible job and you're creating unhappy money, but I'm saving taxes. Mm-hmm. How do you rectify those two scenarios?
So yeah, I think within reason, the it's interesting. I'll go with this example. It might be a little different to your question, but let's go with happy money within this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the question doesn't come, you know, how are these people saving money? How are they taking advantage of that? Because you're not them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have to ask ourselves, how do I use what's been given to me to make this benefit
yes.
me, right? Because if we shift the mindset from rich person bad, this, that, and the other thing, like your life is going to suck.
You know, you're a lot smarter than me. You know that? I didn't even think of that. I love how you frame that. Don't worry about how it affects other people. Don't mm-hmm. worry about what a Democrat or Republican is saying. You can actually dive into chat, ask chat what the bill has, and say, I am making $75,000 a year. How can I use this bill to, you know, benefit me?
Yeah.
That's really wise advice because I'm always thinking about, well, how it's going to affect it. Don't worry how it affects everybody else. Worry how it's going to affect you and then worry how you can utilize it to start creating more happy money. Maybe this is the time where like, okay, I see small businesses are getting a benefit. How do I start a small business? What kind of small business do I love? Because you didn't start the FFL business to become a multimillionaire through it, although you may have that aspirations down the road, but you started it because you liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And is it safe to say that's happy money?
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so.
Would you say this podcast is happy money?
Oh, yeah.
We love doing this, right?
Absolutely.
You get tax write-offs while you're doing it. You learn while you do it. You can earn some money while you do it. And that's what I think you have to do. I love how you really discussed that and said, don't worry about what the rest of the bill is. Where are you right now? How can you benefit
from it? Yeah. Thank you. And even with that, let's talk about, starting a business. And again, it's like, what does that look like as an individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, finding what you'd like to do. Like you say, we're doing this podcast. You have an FFL business. You have different things. I was just talking to a guy recently. We're starting a little Amazon store, e-commerce store. We're trying to figure out ideas. And it's interesting because I'm realizing literally anybody can do this, right? It's not, again, you have all these AI tools. I don't want to say it's not difficult. You need to know what you're doing, but there are tools out there that you can help educate yourself with, right?
Michael, the Amazon store, when you started that, you don't know anybody that did that, correct?
No.
So walk me through that. I mean, like, how did you even like decide, well, let's do this? I mean, like, you can use chat, but what did we do to actually get a head start, mm-hmm. right? There's only two ways to learn. In the classroom and on the street.
Yeah.
We were on the street a little bit. We were trying to fumble ourselves.
I like what being on the street.
You do. It's great.
I hate being in the classroom in this setting. It's like shut up and just give me the content.
So what did we do? I mean, to start that up.
So basically our process for starting this was, okay, we already have an LLC established for the company. We already have all of our paperwork and tax forms done. And so it just came down to, hey, let's brainstorm what we like, what our values align with, what our culture aligns with even, and how do we make a product out of that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's literally what our research comes down to is AI research. How do we use what we enjoy to make a product? And then we go find products online that relate to that kind of culture, style, whatever it is. And then we just see, hey, is this a profitable business to get into? And if it is, then we go forward.
And it's interesting. You missed my little joke on the classroom.
I probably did.
We hired a mentor.
Yes.
We invested in the education. And somebody who's done it for 10 years is showing us his roadmap.
Yes.
His framework. And that you go out and find someone who has success. Success leaves clues.
Mm.
And it's just amazing what he's been able to help us with. Be able to show on how to do research on a product.
Yes.
Like you said, you can do it with AI, but somebody who's done it, somebody who's made millions,
absolutely,
you know, selling these products. And then we fell in love with a couple of products. Those products didn't work. There wasn't enough search in there. There wasn't enough demand in there. So you go back to the drawing board and you start all over. And by the way, you're on a call with him at 8 o'clock last night. So it's one of those things where if you love what you're doing, there's happy money involved, you're going to be ultimately more successful at it. There's more passion to it. You're going to have more drive and desire to do it.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because a lot of times one of the main reasons people don't start businesses is because it takes too long and you get discouraged when it doesn't work.
Yes.
And so it's about being consistent and keep showing up with the idea of there's a 1% chance that this specific thing might work. Mm-hmm. And so you got to do it 100 times and get kicked in the face over and over and over again until you finally find the 1% that works.
It's actually interesting. It's very relatable to real estate.
That's actually what I was going off of. Yeah.
You do your first couple of deals. You know, my business partner, Jake, was very fortunate that he met me because I had made all the mistakes. And we get together in 2011.
Yeah, the time of a lifetime.
And it's just like, you know, you have to go through those heartaches. And that's why wealthy people get the tax breaks. And they get better tax benefits because they go through the heartache. They go through the struggle. They take the risk. They already lose the money. You lose money, you get a 40% tax write-off. I've lost a lot of money, so I know how much savings you make, and that's really painful. But I just want to summarize this really quick. And I've got these notes written down. The middle class gets meaningful short-term relief, more tax take-home pay, child tax credits, but fewer wealth-building tools. The wealthy benefit most in terms of absolute dollar savings, tax strategy flexibility, and generational wealth transfer. That's what this bill has done, right? And how do you use the bill? Like you said, if you're in that middle class, look at it from that perspective. If you're from the wealthier class, look at it from that perspective.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, exactly like you said, you know, everyone has their own tax break, their own tax cut, their own way to utilize this bill. Like you said, it just comes down to how can I use this, right? How can I use this?
So the next thing we need to do, I think we need to back up more suppressors.
Always.
Just saying. Thanks for listening to the Happy Money Podcast, and we will see you on the next episode of the Happy Money Podcast.